Maybe Einstein was wrong about something. Everyone kind of tests him regularly, so they might find someplace, sometime where he was wrong. So no one's fallible. No one's infallible. Everyone's fallible.
Thank you, Dr. Roy, KG2R1.
Okie doke. Any other comments about this before we move on to the next person? Okay. Let me ask, David, you kind of wanted to be put on the list. Are you going to be available for, you know, after Wes is done, or is there going to be a problem with when Wes is done?
Yes, well, I'll do my best. I'll do my best. I'm going to keep the radio on. I'm going to listen as best as I can. Thank you.
Okay, very good. I appreciate that. David, so Wesley, on to you.
Okay, I'm going to try to be quick, to be fast, and to exit. Okay, the first subject on the list that I have sent you, the real reason repeaters are dead, general discussion about fusion systems linked to PDF attached. So if you look at that particular email, at the bottom you have a link to the PDF, you just open up, and there is a bunch of questions there. So I just give some information, then it's up to you. You can simply take the questions and answer the questions there that you have, and they are in the PDF. So in the old days, everything was FM. Everybody had radio that would work on any system, and it was like only the difference. My repeater, it was your repeater. But now there's entirely isolated subgroups. Of course, I'm reading right now the text. The text is not mine. I'm sorry. So English in here is not mine. Isolated subgroups. So you've got DMR guys, the Fusion guys, the T-Star guys, and Analog FM guys. Some of them are on Old Star and not, or not, and then other more peculiar modes like P25 and so on. So let's say we have FM repeaters on two sides linked together, and we added the D-Stars, and then we added fusion system repeater, and then we added DMR, and we have, let's say, four claps, and now we divided the community on four. Of course, we can link them together, but before we do that, people lose attention. So FM repeaters are going away a lot. And a lot of the growth is being given in digital, to the digital. So digital systems are coming up. And of course, there are examples where people like to flip their analog repeater into digital repeater, but a lot of the digital repeaters are adding on the local repeater scene. So fusion repeaters went really up pretty quick, and I would say 90% of the people I talk to who brought the fusion repeaters aren't using it in digital mode, but they use it in analog mode. Well, they got them cheap. But now fewer and fewer companies are making repeaters controllers, some Motorola. Commercial repeaters are still around, and they are good for DMR. I think that digital is easier than analog to put up, but if you really want it sounds good, it takes a little work to integrate. So into, well, let's say, the external control systems, you want to connect multiple radios together, because you're going to do FM radio via IP, and it takes work to make audio sound good. But anyhow, I'm ending the reading that stuff. It is about the fusion system. So, let me drop. What is a system fusion? Fusion repeaters are repeaters that support both digital and analog modes on communication. They use system fusion technology, which allows users to switch between T4 FM digital and FM modes. Fusion repeaters can also connect to the network of repeaters called YSX, which has room where multiple repeaters and nodes can talk to each other. But anyhow, I would like to talk about those systems because there was one particular company that made it popular and they did a lot of to do it. So for Dr. Roy, there is a number of questions. You want to answer this question, address this question, so you want me to read the questions and you provide the answer for it. It's up to you. Back to you, sir. And to you.
Okay. We'll get to the questions in a second. I don't agree with the basis for this discussion. I don't think fundamentally the reason for the decline of repeaters is digital technology. When I first was licensed, I think it was kind of, a couple of DMR, not much. I think it was the problem that killed repeaters, among other things, was the cell phone. In the old days, there was the patch, telepatch, where you could amaze your friends and relatives by using your handy talkie to talk on the telephone system via a repeater. When cell phones made that mute, it kind of killed a lot. Also, we used to have morning drive times and afternoon drive times. All those guys retired and moved to Florida or Carolinas or such. So, you know, there's a lot less people kind of interested in talking on repeaters. Of course, digital modes haven't helped it. They have balkanized repeaters. So in the old days, your FM repeater was the only choice you had. It was just a matter of what band you were on, whether it was 70 centimeter or 2 meter, but it was all FM analog. Now, as you mentioned, it's a D-Star, it's a Fusion, there's three or four others, and unfortunately, you know, M17, those guys are working away to give you yet another non-interactable digital voice mode. So it certainly is fragmenting repeaters, but I don't think that's the fundamental problem. Let me drop for a second.
FGCC with a question?
Certainly, Brian.
I think that all the digital modes, while they're useful, also are a little bit of a cheat because they don't really, for the most part, use RF. It really depends on the actual, it depends on your situation, whether it is going to use RF and that it's going to bridge to the network or something else.
Well, it depends on what you're really talking about. It is perfectly possible for you to go on a DMR repeater on the slot, the time slot that's local, and talk to local people, and that's a purely RF thing. If you go to the other slot that links in with talk groups, then yeah, the talk groups are handled through packets, voice over internet protocol packets, and so you're depending upon internet access to make the long leaps. But you know, I mean, you could stay local. DMR actually usually provides you with a time slot that's totally local, whereas Fusion doesn't. Fusion, you could either link to a room or not link and operate solely as RF. And D-Star, you could link to reflectors or not link to reflectors. So, you know, it depends. It's a complicated mix. But I was intrigued by the technology, but they're not really enthusiastic. Initially, you kind of locked up repeaters by linking them to something that other people wouldn't want. Nowadays, everyone, or almost everyone, has a hotspot, so you don't really need the repeaters anymore. You can use your own hotspot as a local repeater to get into any reflector or room or talk group that you want.
I agree with that statement. I think that's a reasonable approach. Well, actually, not so much of an approach, but it's a reasonable explanation, for regular repeaters, the usage going down.
Yes, David?
What is the difference between regular cell phone transmission reception and non-internet-based phone service? Just the mobile carrier. Is that considered digital?
As far as I'm concerned, yes. I think they kind of shifted everything over to digital. They moved a lot of copper over to fiber. So I think most of the telephony these days is digital in nature.
Yeah, but what is mobile carrier? You know, all phones have mobile carrier, you know. Others are connected through a Wi-Fi or a internet-enabled signal.
Okay, well, some have cell phones, so when you're out and about, and Wi-Fi is more secured, so you can't really access it, so you access cell phone towers, and that's your insertion for your service. If you're home and, surrounded by Faraday cages and such, it might be somewhat advantageous to make your connections through internet, but that internet eventually goes to a server at the company that you pay for your cell tower privileges, and it handles the rest of the transmission beyond that point.
Comment, KF2CZ.
Yes, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, the cellular networks by design nowadays, okay, are really all digital. There isn't any analog component. Everything is not only digitized, but it's also encrypted as well. And spread spectrum techniques are used to go ahead and enhance that, encryption. It gets very, very sophisticated with the type of modulation that they use. And there's a lot of different permutations that, and I'm no expert on cellular technology, but I know enough to tell you that it is rather complex in terms of the way they do things in between towers and in between phones. Now, when you are at home, you could use, let's say, your Wi-Fi instead of the cellular network, and that will act as a gateway, and that is another approach.
Yeah, but in addition, you have to keep in mind the FCC made a rule that you can't really sell a radio receiver that receives the old analog signals of the cell phones, even though no one's used those frequencies for the cell phones in 20 years. Also, there are ways to skin every cat. And there are some tricks of the trade that I'm not going to spread here, that if you know someone or have a couple of $1,000 and can get access to it, you can get into anyone's phone system. It's really, unfortunately, not that difficult. It's not something that, I could do for free because I don't have the connections and I don't have the $10,000 to buy my access to it. but there are guys out there who do.
Well, I would guess that it's, you know, possible to go ahead and, there are units, like scanners and stuff like that, you know, that pick up digital signals that, you know, can or cannot scan the cell bands, and some, you know, it depends on the if they use encryption or not. So I know in the U.S. they don't sell those, but overseas, I mean, export, I believe that you can get those units.
Yeah, well, I mean, the bottom line is, unfortunately, we talked about this a long time ago, that locks are not designed to be pit-proof. Locks are designed to be more difficult to get open than your neighbor's locks. And the same thing goes with encryption and such. Bank encryption is probably a little bit better because I don't think there's a back door. But cell towers and cell phone infrastructure do have back doors. And there are people with credentials and not so great credentials who use those back doors. So, again, assume that anything you do or say has been written down on an index card and thumbtacked on your local public library bulletin board.
Oh, I totally agree on that. There's a limitation to security on everything. That's just to be expected with technologies.
Yeah. Anyone else with any comments before I get to Wesley's 17 question? Okay, I take that as a no. I'll try and make this as painless as possible. First question is in relation to fusion. And by the way, I'm one of those guys who talked their club, Kings County Radio Club, into buying a dirt cheap fusion repeater because we had an ancient one that was 25 plus years old and had seen better days, and they basically, Yaesu was giving them away. So I nagged the heck out of my fellow club members. We had a fusion repeater that I never used on fusion because I don't really care that much for digital. I use it as an FM analog. I use it every week when I do my TechNet there in analog. Anyway, first question is it like D-Star? Well, yes, it's sort of like D-Star. But it's not compatible with D-Star. You could have a D-Star radio and you'll never be able to understand what's going on a fusion repeater because although it is a digitized voice mode that uses phase shift keying, the nuances of the phase shift keying, the design of the packets of the bits is different. And I think even the voice encoder decoder is slightly different. So they are incompatible, but they work on a similar basis. That's one. Two, you mentioned that the system fusion is an open standard, but isn't it proprietary to Yaesu? As far as I'm concerned, yeah, it's open. Yaesu is the only people, I think, that sell fusion radio. So if you want a fusion radio, you can't even get a Chinese one. So it's a proprietary, I don't know, but for all intents and purposes, it is. Let me drop for a sec.
Fusion is proprietary to Yaesu. They designed it, and you actually need to register with Yaesu to get an ID for it.
Well, yeah, and also, it's even worse than that. The rooms, all the voice, digital voices, use a different term for their groups. DMR has talk groups, D-Star has reflectors, and Fusion has rooms. So all the rooms take place on proprietary servers in Japan owned by Yaesu. So for all intents and purposes, it's a proprietary standard. Anyway, the next question was, do a system Fusion Radio support APRS? I don't know. I don't think so, but I could be completely wrong. APRS is a curious little interesting thing, but you don't really, you know, I've seen digital versions, I've seen analog versions, so you might be able to fudge something. Question four is, what radios are System Fusion capable, and where can I find them? They're basically Yaesu manufactured handy talkies and UHF VHF radios. Usually you'll see they say C4FM or they say Fusion or something. So they're out there, but they're all Yaesu. Question five, can I use any 2-meter or dual band FM amplifier if I want more power? Yes, you can, because Fusion is not time sliced. DMR is time sliced. So it will alternate between two channels on the same frequency at different time intervals. So if you hook up a DMR radio to a power amplifier that isn't designed for very rapid switching, you will break your power amplifier. Let me break for a sec. Okay.
This is ready to support APRS. Each transmitter contains APRS feature set. The display capability is very weird, different modes, but the core settings are similar.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah?
Did you ask if Fusion supports APRS?
Well, that's what Wesley asked, and Wesley answered.
Yes, Fusion is APRS is very supported on Fusion. It's heavily supported.
Okay, I mean, you know, what can I tell you? That doesn't really make me any more sympathetic. Like I said, I have more than a few Fusion capable radios. I use all of them in analog mode. It's just I don't see the point of digital, to tell you the truth. I've read the specs and the promises and all the other things, and FM works as well as I would need it. Anyway, let's see. When someone is using the digital mode on a repeater, I hear sounds like a high-speed modem. Is there some way to silence that sound on my radio? Well, there is. It's called the tone squelch. If you're fortunate enough to have a radio that's capable of tone squelch, if you use tone squelch for the frequency, even if it's fusion. So if it's a fusion repeater, it could be either analog or it could be digital. But it only injects the tone squelch when it's analog. So the squelch will only open if an analog signal is being sent through it. If a digital signal is being sent through it, it'll be blocked by the tone squelch. So that's how you get away with not listening to digital noise on a repeater that's capable of sending FM and the digital. Okay, we'll go to the next one. I don't want to interfere, but if I can't hear the digital transmission, how will I know when the repeater is being used? Well, if you set up the tone squelch, you'll sort of see that it's receiving a signal, but because it's being squelched, you're not hearing the signal. AC2GS, by the way. When other hams are in a digital voice QSO and I need to use the repeater for something with some urgency, is there a way to break into the conversation or talk to them? Not really. It's one of the things that really annoys me about Fusion. I mentioned that I do a technical net on that repeater, KC2RC. And in the old days, we had a bunch of guys all over the country who were hanging out in our room. And so I would be trying to talk on the analog signal, and all of a sudden the KC2RC room would erupt with digital splatter. And because they were just listening on digital, and because analog doesn't work very well in rooms, we couldn't really tell them to go away. So that's a problem. Question 9, is there a commonly used simplex frequency for digital use when I don't want to use the repeater or it's being used already? To my knowledge, no. I don't know. I would imagine it's you just use the calling simplex frequency, and you're not supposed to stick around there anyway, so I would assume you use that. Any comments before I move on to the next question? Okay, number 10. Is there a net or round table specifically for those of us with system fusion gear? Yes, there are loads of nets that are available in different rooms and rooms that are hooked up to hotspots. You just have to do some Google searches, and there is loads of special interest groups that hang out all over the place. Any questions or comments? I'll move on to the next one. Okay, question 11. So what's the big deal with digital voice? Why is it better than good old FM? Well, that's the question. Some people will tell you that there are some nuanced benefits, that digital has a better range, that it breaks up less than analog. But if you've ever heard digital get distorted when it has packet loss and such, it's not a fun thing to listen to. Any comments, or else I'll move on to number 12.
KG2R1.
Yes, David.
Talking about packet loss, when I look at D-Star, on the digital voice dashboard, you know, you can see how much packet loss is there. A lot of times, you can't even hear what people are saying.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if your signal is good, it's good. It's kind of independent of what technology is being used. It has some redundancies, but not a lot. So there's a certain point of diminishing returns where, as the packet loss increases, the algorithms have nothing to work with. And you just get R2-D2 or something weird. Eric, KE2EJ, who had a hearing problem and I think wore hearing aids, favored some versions of digital voice over others because the artifacts, independent artifacts of the different methods used, some agreed with his hearing aid a little bit more than others. Anyway, question 12, what about networking or some way to link to other system fusion users and repeaters? Well, that's the whole point of the Wires X rooms. The idea is you get a box, plug it into the internet, plug it into your repeater, and it links with the Yaesu's server rack. And also there are guys out there who patch into the servers and the Wires X rooms and have independent parallel gateways that you could use hotspots to get to. Question 13, are there any other system fusion repeaters in the area, or is this the only one? Well, that's kind of a weird question. Kings County Radio Club has one. Limark has one. Probably others have one. I don't think they're terribly popular, but, you know, they exist. Again, you can't argue with the price. They were practically giving them away. Any comments before I move on to question 14?
KF2ZC.
Yes, Brian?
Couple of comments. One on digitized audio. That is very dependent on the quality and the speed of the sampling. So that's a very, very important thing to consider, the sampling rate. That's what, you know, digital audio is really based on. So the sampling rate is crucial to having a really well-rounded digital signal for audio. There was another question, I think, that regarding there. Oh yes, yes. Just to mention this casually, there are gateways that will let a DMR, a station, speak to a D-Star and a Fusion that are run on a computer, sort of like translating packets. So it is possible to go ahead and do that, but natively, as a whole, they are incompatible.
Well, yeah, I mean, the independent parallel gateways are totally different creatures. None of them are owned by any of the companies. They're set up by guys who make and set the rules and throw you out if they don't like you. They're cross-connected and interconnected, and it's like a snake eating itself. There are sometimes nets have this weird thing where transmissions will go from rooms to talk groups, but won't return from talk groups to rooms. So the routes become one way until they reboot the servers. So it's another cause for confusion. It's useful in that you don't have to stick with one brand, but it can lead to all kinds of problems. And as you said, with digital audio, you're kind of talking more about musical reproduction. When it comes to voice, the telephone company figured out that it doesn't have to worry about, you know, 20,000, 0 to 20,000 hertz. They get it right, you know, 200 hertz to 3,200 hertz. That's the best fidelity for the human voice. So you can screw the bandpass filter, you can screw the bitrate. Even if you do all that, though, the amount of data is way too much. You would clog up the frequencies because the amount of data that you would have to send back and forth is too high. So that's why you need a codex, encoder-decoder voice device that will take phonemes and compact them down to very simple digits so that you have a massive compression of data so that the bandwidth of your digital mode doesn't take over the entire band.
Well, I agree with that 100%, both comments. With the you know, with digital voice, yes, the frequency part of the frequency spectrum is crucial, but also the speed of the codec is very, very important in order to go ahead and take that megaload of data and to move it along as fast as possible. So there's a lot of things behind the scenes that are going on.
Yeah. I mean, none of them are kind of state of the art. Most of the technology involved is a good 20 years old. Anyway, let's go to question 13. Are there other system fusion repeaters? We got to that. 14, I understand that my call sign is sent as part of every transmission. Does this mean I don't need to verbally ID? I think you still have to verbally ID because, you know, that's kind of murky territory, even though most of these digital modes either have a call sign or they have a unique ID. DMR does not have the capability of transmitting your call sign. It uses a unique identifier instead. Question 16 is, I understand there may be a way for a system fusion repeater to also support D-Star. Is that true? To my understanding, no, it's not. And finally, question 17, some of these new terms and the alphabet soup of abbreviations are making my brain hurt. Plus, I have other questions. Where can I get the answers? Well, I guess here. Anyway, that's the best I could do, Wesley. I hope I answered those questions reasonably well.
Intuition, yes, you did. There are a few differences, but not needed to mention. So the next one is Kiwi. Kiwi is DR. K-I-W-I is DR2, a standalone software-defined radio receiver. So I sent you the picture. There is an active antenna with the DX engineer with the short element active vertical antennas the model number DXC-RSEAV-1FVI. And this one is $349.99. And then you have two pictures of the system, so that if you don't mind to say a few words about it, there is a text below the picture. Dr. Ray, I'm sorry.
Yeah, DX Engineering apparently is distributing it in the United States. It looks like a nice software-defined radio receiver. It doesn't do any transmission. A lot of the features that are talked about are open source, you know, that they basically have hooks to third-party programs, some of which have probably have to be paid for, others are free, and so, you know, they work reasonably well together, I guess. I have no experience whatsoever with Kiwi SDRs. At first, I was a little bit concerned that I saw a lot of New Zealand being talked about. It's made in New Zealand. Obviously, that's what the Kiwi is all about. But DX Engineering is a reputable distributor, so, you know, it's an option out there.
Yeah, well, I see something that is good. Let's say you're doing DX, and because you can listen to it from 10 kilohertz to 30 kilohertz, and you have a map that shows you the active receivers, there are plenty of them, and you might not hear the station very well. But if you switch to the particular receiver at that area, you may have a good reception of it. And actually, you may talk to the station that you cannot even receive, but you can say, as long as that station is able to hear you, let's say with 1.5 kilowatt power, what your license allows you to do, you can make that QSO back to you.
Okay. You know, like I said before, I mean, there's lots of SDRs out there, and this is one of them. Can be an emptor. Let the buyer beware, you know. Spending $300-$400 for a receiver is a nice bit of change.
Casters, is he with a comment?
Yes, Brian.
Wesley asked the question earlier. I don't know if it was a question or it was somewhere buried in the all the questions that were being answered. Just to mention to Wesley that there is a device from Yaesu. It's called the HRI-200. And what it does is let you basically create a internet to RF communications link, and also set up your own room on a Fusion. So you could have your own Fusion room on the internet and over RF as well. So just a little point of information there. Again, it's called the HRI-200. Not very expensive, but you know, you have to evaluate that for yourself. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a WireXX room gateway. There are also some radios where you buy a special adapter and plug it into the internet access, and you can get a WireXX room that way as well. The Kings County Radio Club uses an HRI-200 in order to access our gateway because our repeater doesn't have local internet service provider.
There you go. That explains it. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. I guess back to you, Wesley. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, there's a lot of good reasons for an SDR receiver. Some people just spend $30 on a dongle or RTL. There are much sleeker, sophisticated, hackable radio devices out there for a couple more shekels.
Well, keeping it SDR is independent SDR network receiver and standalone SDR software-defined radio receiver. But it's receiver only and operates across the frequency from 10 kilohertz to 30 megahertz. So we're talking about the most visited on HF band by us. And because it does have VLF, then for those, including me, who are interested with very low frequency, we can listen to it, but not below 10 kilohertz. Actually, some sources says 40 kilohertz instead of 10 kilohertz, but I'm mostly interested with 17 kilohertz anyhow. So let me drop. Inside that Kiwi SDR2, there is a green board preloaded with Debian, which is the Linux system. It's Debian 11.9 and all necessary SDR software. And you can have a switching power supply that minimizes the RF noise and gas discharge tube for surge protection. So it is gas. It's a common right now device included in F connector that you don't have to have it on a board. So the setup process involves the GPS antenna. You don't have to have it, power led and Ethernet cable to the home network. But the thing is that if I'm not mistaken, I didn't use it, you can go to QESDR webpage. You don't have to buy anything. You can see all of the stations, unless after you purchase it, then you would be able to access that. I don't know how it works. Maybe someone from people listening to that knows it better. But anyhow, nothing is for free. Back to you.
Well, I mean, not necessarily. There are a lot of very generous software people who, back in the good old days, I wrote shareware and gave it away. And so there's a lot of good free stuff. But, a lot of times it's not shareware. It's trialware. You can try it for X number of days, weeks, months, years. Then you got to start paying money. So you're never quite sure because some people are not quite upfront. They'll promote it as a free program because the first day it certainly is free, and they don't mention that, 30 days later it's no longer free. So, caveat emptor.
Give you a whole bunch of functions that are locked out and just have like one or two active.
Yeah, there's all kinds of different permutations, but, sometimes people think they're a little more clever than they are. I think it was a couple of Chinese test equipment manufacturers had fully functional test equipment. It was just locked down with some kind of a code. And, within about a week and a half, everyone knew the code. But, I thought it was more clever than it was.
Yeah, actually I try to avoid anything Chinese. I don't care about the price. Anyhow, the next subject, because I have to speed up, the only logical economic HF ham radios for 2024. And then I have a text, it is not my text, the language is not mine, and I don't want to read all of it, but at least some of it. Companies continue to put up. So for the video that I sent to Dr. Ray, said no need to watch it at all. So I'm starting to quote. Companies continue to put up crap that we don't want to refuse, and they refuse to give us HF. UHF, VHF, 100 watt radio. Nobody wants the QRP. Nobody of those who were abused, punished, struggling, and whatsoever they say about the nonsense of using the QRP, and it is good just for the small footprint, and then at the end of it, because I'm trying to avoid of it, it's just not the language that I would say I respect. Okay, so they talk about gigantic waste of time, listening to somebody and transmitting with this small power, and if they are in emergency, what they can do with the 5-watt crap and whatsoever. But anyway, he says that he wants, and we, ham radio, let me drop. We want a big radio manufacturers to give us a good big radio, 100 watts. It could be old ICOM 706, but rather it would be H57 that I would like to have. And the point is that entry level radio costs about $1,000, and a high quality one is $5,000 plus. And we have right now the three new radios, which is FT1F, ICOM IC7760, and Kendo Tri-Band Mobile, which doesn't have a model number set yet, but it was at the convention in Japan. So the question is, if he proposes to avoid FT7300, FTDX10, FTDX101D, and Kenwood TS590 because it's old, and ICOM 7610 that has HF and 50 megahertz. What the heck do you want? What the heck you want? I mean, I'm asking, what is the aggravation in him? Back to you, and to Adrian.
It's snarkiness for the sake of snarkiness. I mean, if I had to guess, although some aspects sound like it's a middle-aged guy, it could just as easily be, Gen Xer or something. Different strokes for different folks, people. You know, you like URP? God bless you. Enjoy it. You know, if I was the type of guy, which I'm not, who wore T-shirts that made statements, I probably would have a T-shirt that says, life is too short for QRP. But that's just me. It's, you know, if you like QRP, you like QRP. This is just an overly opinionated message from, you know, some guy either pretending to be a miserable human being or a miserable human being, one or the other.
Okay, the next one. Add SDR receiver to any ham radio rig. I was asking in the last segment if there is any radio that decodes CW, and there is a little dongle, and this dongle does it, and I sent you the YouTube, and there is a code that I would like to read. The SDR switch from N2EME allows you to use SDR receiver safely alongside your main transceiver using the same antenna system. Not only that, you can use it in many other different ways to improve the overall receive capability of your station. So what do you think about it, Dr. Ray?
It's a TR switch. We've almost always had TR switches. There's nothing particularly special about a TR switch. Okay, when the arm of the TR switch is an SDR, so that is an SDR switch. But it's a TR switch, number one. Number two, as far as I'm aware, that dongle doesn't decode. The dongle does what SDRs like RTL do, which is to just kind of run detection software and have an audio output. I think the software included has the ability to kind of summon third-party products that then capture the audio and do the decoding. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's what they were talking about, rather than the dongle itself having built-in CW decoding capability, but I don't think it did.
Comment? What?
Yes, Brian?
Yeah, KF2ZZ. I have a Yaesu FT710, and the next model above that, I believe, is the FTDX10 or something like that. Now, the difference between those two models, with the FT710 being the newer one, is that it omits the CW decoder and RIDI. So you don't have those capabilities on this radio. And, you know, to be quite honest, that's fine with me. But the FTDX10 has, I believe, RIDI and also has a built-in CW decoder. So I think there's a little bit of, you know, overlap there. And that's, you know, I think everything in time will be SDR. It'll be, you know, a small role, but I think that's the way things are going.
Well, I would agree with you for a number of reasons. I think the price of silicon keeps dropping, and so the ultimate cost for manufacturer of a software-defined radio-based radio is just going to be a lot cheaper. But there's nothing inherent in SDRs that would make them be able to do computational decoding, except that they had computers on board, and they, you know, you could write software for them, I guess. You could theoretically kind of build the same thing, and most of these things are not kind of designed to be portable. So you're going to have a computer right next to your radio anyway. So you put the audio into your computer, and you can do anything that you want to. You don't necessarily have to depend upon inborn programming. Because, you know, the programming might get better, but manufacturers usually don't upgrade their firmware that often.
KG2RY?
Yes, David?
Oh, I just wanted to mention, I have three radios. Two of them are analog. One of them has an IF crystal filter for upper and lower sideband. The other one is, they say hybrid, but, you know, hybrid with the preamp and a SDR radio. And, you know, how do you tell, you know, which one is doing the best job and which one sounds the best? And how do you determine that? Do you have to sit and listen to each one for a day and a half so you can determine, you know, which one doesn't hurt your ears too much? Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of both. If you want to have a third party, you go to the Sherwood receiver data page, and you look to see where your radio is on his list. So that's a guy who specializes in running tests on all these things. And for individual likes or dislikes, you just have to sit there in front of it and decide whether you like it or not.
Yeah, I think you just got to listen. It's the same as a lot of other things. And that was my question for tonight, but I don't think we have enough time.
Well, we might. I mean, let's see. We have, I think, one or two more questions, and we could wrap this up, and we might have enough time. We'll see.
Yeah, let me speed up.
FGZZ with a quick comment.
Yes, Brian?
Yeah, when they talk about Sherwood, okay, you're talking about a laboratory environment. You know, it's not, it's optimized, okay? The environment is optimized for testing. You really have to get units around, you know, someplace and have them do real life in order to really go ahead and see how well it's going to do. But the laboratory testing, you know, with all kinds of spectrum analyzers and RF and everything like that is a good predictor.
Yes, I agree. You know, you have the reviews. Unfortunately, there's confirmation bias that kind of distorts those. You have your own individual likes or dislikes. and you have Sherwood receiver because the guy is kind enough to do that. So it's not, I don't live or die by, you know, if God forbid my Flick 6700 drops a couple of off the top of the list, I'm not going to cry about it. But, you know, it's another data point.
I always wondered if the Sherwood reports, the rankings are influenced by money.
Possibly, almost everything is, but I give the guy the benefit of the doubt. I have no reason to surmise that. It's not like he has the most profitable companies at the very top and the esoteric companies that usually don't give anyone anything free at the bottom. It's usually the opposite, but who knows?
There's a lot of bragging rights when it comes to evaluating and testing, you know, ham radio equipment. It's truly amazing the spectrum of answers that you'll get.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a factor of humanity at its finest. Everyone wants to show off. I remember a guy, may he rest in peace, used to frequent this repeater and always would tell people how much money he had and how much he spent. You know, he said, I got to leave early. I got to pick up a red Mercedes sports car for the missus. And at one point, he bought an ICOM, and he said, I don't know what model it is. It's just the most expensive ICOM that they sell. So, you know, some people just like to do that. And as long as they use their own money and not mine, I figure they're free to do that.
Let's go for them. The ham radio cars with no holes in the wall. So I sent Chuck to point the picture of it. They say it's a comet that does it is $70.95, but I saw similar one Chinese for $9. Also, this is a 1.3 gigahertz and has two connectors, so 239. So when you open up the window, you have a sort of jumper, flat jumper, and then you can close the window, and that's the replacement for the coaxial cable. But they say that 1.5 to 1 is the loss on it, and what is your comment as to ring?
They're cute. I saw them. You know, they've been around since before I was licensed. If you only have one antenna and you don't want to make a mess, I guess maybe. I don't know of anyone who just has one antenna. You know, I at one point had something like five coax going through the window. You get a 2x4, you drill a hole through it, and you kind of use some caulking to kind of make it airtight, and you got something better than that coax extension, in my humble opinion.
Okay, the next one, for Dr. Roy, to print on his 3D printer, I sent you the two pictures of six elements, quad, cubical quad antenna, which is good for 2 meters, 70 centimeters and above. And I found it really, really interesting. Really interesting because you can print it, you don't have to buy it. And you can do with it whatever you want. What do you think about it, Dr. Wright?
Well, AC2GS, by the way, I'm a big fan. As I've mentioned repeatedly about 3D printing, I have these days a Prusa XL, which is a humongous thing. This weekend I've been printing a little remote controllable multicolor lamps. One of them looks like the moon, another one looks like the earth, and that interests me. You could build little bits and pieces for antennas. You have to be cautious because some filaments are susceptible to UV damage, so you would want to use something like ASA plastic filaments instead of PLA or ABS, which would break down from the UV lights and such. I'm a big fan of 3D printing. I've printed lots of things, and no doubt I will spend a lot more money printing lots and lots of other things. Will I be printing this particular antenna? Not really. I don't really need an extra 40-centimeter antenna. So 3D printing's fun. If people have a couple of bucks to kill and curious about it, buy yourself an inexpensive one, and if you really love it, then you can go to town and waste even more money on it.
Well, thank you.